I'm not a burden. And even if I was a burden, that's a relatively light burden.
Welcome to the Telling It Our Way podcast. I'm Allie.
And I'm Becca. In this podcast, we bring you stories by disabled people about disabled people. Stories from the daily lives of self-advocates with intellectual and developmental disabilities.
These are real people with complicated lives. They don't want your pity, and they don't exist to inspire you.
Yeah, this is not inspiration porn. So, Allie, we have a really, really exciting episode today. This is on a topic that I know that you have been dying to cover for the entire run of the podcast. So why don't you tell us about it?
I know. I've been wanting to do an episode like this since we started. And while this is the first one, it by no means covers everything. We're just going to sort of skim the surface of the bucket of water.
So today, our topic, we are talking about benefits, what it means to be, quote unquote, on disability.
And this is really complicated and maybe one of the most misunderstood aspects of living with a disability. Statistically, most people who are living with disabilities, ourselves included, are not receiving any monetary support from the government. Those monetary supports are actually really difficult to get.
Yeah, and once you have them, they are really, really hard to keep, to live on, to manage. And there's like a lot of stereotypes that exist around people who do receive them.
So I really want to just jump into our story for today. So we just have one story. And I want to hear from Tom about his experience working and balancing disability on Social Security income.
Tom is going to give us so much that we're going to dive into after we hear this story. But first, I think we just want to hand it over to Tom.
Yeah, let's hear from Tom.
Being on Social Security and trying to make a living is one of the hardest things I've ever had to do. I have a mind that is extremely intelligent, but I'm limited to $2,000 a month in the bank. I can only make $18 an hour, where someone with my qualifications could be making upwards of $40,000 a year. People see me work in a work environment, and they see someone with a job coach. They don't see a person. When they find out I have disabilities, they think less of me. Their perceptions change immediately. I've always been told that I will never amount to anything. I was told that I would never be able to function properly in society. People have always looked down on me and cast me out since early elementary school. Growing up in an abusive home made it really hard because my father considered me a loss from day one. But if there weren't supportive people like my mother, I never would have gotten here. I've had to overcome abuse, drugs, and violence. When people said I wouldn't amount to anything, it made me feel worthless. Then it made me angry. And then it made me resilient. I receive Social Security, $1,500 a month, and I'm grateful for it. But I'm seen as a burden when I'm extremely hardworking and loyal, and that's not okay. I have a savings account I'm allowed to put money into, but that can only have up to $18,000 in a year, if I can even save that much. Being able to work full-time and still manage my money to where I don't get penalized, either by my savings or by Social Security themselves, is extremely hard. People think that I just go out and buy a new phone or a new item of clothing whenever I want. When I go out and I need something, like a grocery trip, that's $300 to $400. I have to plan that ahead for the month. I constantly penny scrape. I have lived before off of a can of cream of mushroom soup and a slice of bread a day and still done factory work. Because sometimes that is what you have to do when you're behind on Social Security. And when you're behind, you have to go without. I'm thankful because I've paid into the system. I believe that the system is good, and I believe that people should get more. I've lived constantly borrowing money from the bank and paying it back just to make it by. And it's not fair to think that I'm some fool milking welfare. I don't milk anything. I wouldn't be surprised if sometime in my life that I get off welfare because I've worked so hard to improve my standards when everyone else said that I would never. I've gone to school. I'll be going back to school. I have my 2-year degree in business. I'm going for my 4-year. I have survived on everything and nothing. And people don't realize what it's like to randomly find that one can of cream of mushroom soup in your fridge and be so happy that you get to eat without going to the food bank or going out and doing whatever else you had to do for food. It's hard. Losing your benefits is extremely easy, and it can happen over just an extra $500 a month. With Social Security, I'm lucky that I am able to work 40 hours a week. But once I go past $18 an hour, or less sometimes, they start docking me. So that $18 an hour mark is just not something I am able to get into, despite having the qualifications and despite being the kind of person who is hardworking and who should be making more. I have to stay right at the low end or risk losing benefits. Moving up in my career means more money, and that means turning down positions that means not even being looked at for positions. Once your employers find out you're disabled, they assume the worst. You tell someone you can only work this much and can't do overtime, and employers don't care if you have to work overtime. Employers don't care that ends up negatively affecting you. I would love to make more money. I would love to be able to transfer into a position in society where I am a standalone household. But then I lose my benefits. And if I lose my medical benefits without understanding and getting a different system of benefits in place, then my mental health tanks, and then I'm stranded. That's the hardest part, figuring out how to make insurance work. I have had months where I have literally received change of benefit papers twice a week, every week of a month. If I take employer health care, then that can affect my state-run health care. But state-run healthcare would affect employer healthcare. So I need to be able to understand the different pros and cons between plans and do that on my own. They literally have people who do that for businesses and for employees because it's such a task. It's like learning to do your own taxes. On one hand, I feel really bad for the people that have to pay so much into Social Security. Our government has so many other streams of revenue that they could be pursuing to take some of that load off of people. But at the same time, if you one day got disabled and needed this program, you would thank God for every penny you earn, and it is hard earned. You could be rejected 3 different times just for applying, and each application takes at least a month. So meanwhile, you have no cash and you can't work. Because even if you could work part-time, that would affect your standing with Social Security. When I'm working, I basically put my share back to get my share. I'm not a burden. And even if I was a burden, that's a relatively light burden. Like, if we can't care for each other as a society, then what are we doing? And that doesn't mean that you don't get yours. I want you to be able to have money to spend on your family and your friends. It's like $300 a month out of most people's checks, and that's rough, especially now. But that $300 a month that you say, ouch, I really could use that, that's someone eating for 2 months, that's rice, beef, and vegetables for 2 months, that's someone getting an Uber to their appointment and back. People told me that I would never be a homeowner. I am a homeowner. that I'd never drive a car. I drive a brand new car. And that's ridiculous. Now, because it's been so hard to get there, and people see it as an abuse of money. Now that I have amounted to something, it feels like I'm not supposed to be here, and like I'm waiting for the other shoe to drop. Because I have to maintain that status quo. I have to continue to improve on my life. No one else will do it for me. No one will catch me if I lose my job or fall. It's never that simple. I'm not supposed to be here. So when I roll by with the windows down and the music up, yeah, I deserve to be here. When I wear my suit out in public just because I can, it's not to show off, it's to remind myself that I pulled myself up when other people said I should not. People with disabilities have so much more potential than you give them credit for. They are loyal and they are hardworking. If you are thinking about not hiring someone with disabilities, you should think again, because they will stay at a company as long as they are reasonably respected. We don't expect you to be our friends. We don't expect you to be our nannies on a job site. We just want a fair shot, and it doesn't cost you anything more than hiring someone. You never know, that person who may need a little bit of assistance in one field could have a solution to a problem you've had for 10 years, and you won't know it until you hire them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much to Tom for that story. It just leaves me with so much to think about. The thing I'm immediately struck with is the way that he talks about the work that he has to put into just surviving, right? To maintaining his income, both as a person who works and as a person who receives benefits, to maintaining his health care, to keeping track of all of these different services that he needs to negotiate through. It just seems that the sort of cognitive burden of managing benefits is a whole other job on top of the jobs that he already works.
Yeah, it's ironic, right? Because we think that you are receiving benefits because you're incapable of working, and yet the amount of work and organization and cognitive skills that you need to have to be able to maintain this support, particularly over a longer period of time.
Well, we're going to get into it, right? But the ways in which people who receive government benefits are able to save looks a little bit different from people who aren't on those benefits. But I think we want to start with just kind of some baseline understanding, because like you said at the top of the episode, this is a subject that I think most people have the wrong information about.
Yeah, because we are who we are, we brought a boatload of statistics, probably a little bit too many. So we'll try to pare them down for our listeners. Some of what we're going to sort of reference next comes from the Social Security Administration itself. So here are some stats about the size and scope of the program. One of the things that we know is that disability benefits are paid to about 8.9 million people, which sounds like a lot of people.
But it's really, that's about 3.9% of the total population, right? That's not actually very many people in the United States.
And a lot of this goes to disabled workers. So 89% of awards are to those who are disabled as a result of work.
Right. So this would be a person who, for example, gets an injury on a job and then temporarily stops working or something like that. Though there are a couple of different kinds of benefits, right? There are these disabled worker benefits, so people who have worked and paid into the system and then develop a disability, and either that's temporary or it's permanent. And then we also have disabled widow or widowers, so a person who is surviving from someone who was receiving those benefits.
And we haven't always had these benefits, right? I mean, these really didn't emerge until less than 100 years ago, right? We're talking about the 1930s, mm-hmm. With sort of some of the things that FDR was thinking about.
Sure, right.
During the Great Depression.
And industrialization, right? As we kind of change the way that we do work, we find that we need these systems in place. And then we also have the disabled adult children, right? So this is for people who are born with disabilities who then receive disability benefits as they kind of age out of childhood.
And we know that the average age of people who receive these benefits is 56 mm-hmm. years old. So it's an older set of the population. It's not, maybe sometimes there is this idea that it's young people
who don't want to work.
Who don't want to work, mm-hmm. right? I think that there is a stereotype there about disabled people who are, quote unquote, on disability.
That's why we wanted to lay out some of these facts to begin with, right? Because I think the thing that we're really interested in talking about are these myths that exist around disability benefits. So, you know, who's actually getting these benefits? What we know is overwhelmingly, it's people who work and have paid into these systems. Tom talks about this too. He says, you know, I'm not a burden for receiving these benefits. I work. I pay taxes. I pay into these systems. And what I really love about his story is he says, you know, even if I didn't, that's still a price worth paying as a society to support people who haven't paid into these mm-hmm. systems.
And Tom really values work and wants to work mm-hmm. in really important ways in a paid industry, right? And that's not, but he also recognizes that that's not everyone.
Well, and one of the other things he brings up is that these cash benefits are also related to his health care, right? So he receives government-supported healthcare insurance, right? And so if he lost his cash benefits, he would also lose access to that medical care. And so that's part of why he has to play this kind of balancing game of only being able to earn a certain amount of money through work so that he can maintain these other services that he needs to survive.
So it makes you think how, and this is just a question I'm posing for our listeners to think about, how this system could be different if we all had healthcare, if mm-hmm. we all had access to healthcare equitably, how would a system of disability benefits be different? And we can't sort of jump into a comparative analysis. That would take an entire semester and more of our university classes to really dig into. But it's something to sort of think about because so much of the balance that Tom is constructing or is sort of pushed into has to do with continuing to access healthcare.
Right. And he talks about he can't advance in his career, right? If he was to seek a promotion, promotions come with a rise in income. If his income goes up too much, he loses those benefits. And so he is kind of striking this balance where he's like, I should be further in my career than I am allowed to be because of these systems that are in place. And that in itself is baseline discriminatory.
You know, I think sometimes we think that these cash benefits are overwhelmingly lush, right? That if you're getting these cash benefits, you're going to be able to live without a care in the world. And what we know is that the average monthly benefit received for somebody on Social Security is $1,483.
And that is if you do not have another income, right?
So if you're expected to live on that.
Mm-hmm. So if you're working part-time, you're making even less than that.
And it doesn't make a difference whether you live in New York City or Toledo, Ohio. Mm-hmm. Which are examples that I give as two very different costs of living, right? Living on $1,400 a month in Toledo, Ohio would be very difficult, but you could find a rent for $600 a month and stretch the rest. But I don't know how you would do that in New York City.
Right. And so, you know, we sometimes in our field refer to this as a cycle of poverty that exists for disabled people, right? It's impossible for disabled people in many ways when they're receiving benefits to acquire wealth. And so then there is also a generational problem that comes along with that. There is no way for kind of stability in the system that we have right now. Even with, for the last just over a decade, there was a law that was passed that allowed for people who are receiving cash benefits to open a very specific kind of savings account and start to save a little bit of money. But the way that you can use that money is pretty strictly surveilled. Tom talks a little bit about that too. And so, you know, the system has improved, but in many ways, it is making it impossible for disabled people to stop relying on these cash benefits. And yet we have this kind of cultural narrative that people are cheating the system or being lazy or being burdens on you know, the American taxpayer, which always is referring to a non-disabled person in people's minds.
You know, one of the things that we don't think about is the number of people who are on disability who also have dependents or who are also caregivers, right? So thinking about folks that might still be supporting children or have young children at home or supporting adult children or who are supporting elderly parents, right? Just sort of the kinds of care infrastructures and the ways that we always think of the disabled person on benefits as solely caring for themselves, that that's their only, and we know statistically that that's just not true, right?
Right. I mean, and that's kind of generally how we think about disabled people as always being dependent, right? Mm-hmm. As always relying on other people. I think it's just a perpetuation of that kind of narrative.
And one of the other sort of catch-22s of trying to live on these cash benefits is the way that it, we talked about the cycle of poverty generationally, but also the closer you are to poverty, the closer you are to being subject to more disabling factors, mm-hmm. right? Whether that's a kind of work that is repetitive that would cause more disabling conditions for you, or environmental economies or environmental conditions where you're closer to pollutants and things like that that would cause asthmatic conditions or migraine conditions or other things, so that poverty only compounds existing disabilities. And we know that if you are non-disabled in poverty, you're more apt to become disabled. And if you're already disabled in poverty, you're going to experience a compounding of that disability, which makes it even harder, right? To do the care and be a engaged citizen in your communities. It isolates you.
Which is another reason we just need to reject this narrative of people being lazy or being burdens on the system or trying to cheat the systems, right? These are systemic infrastructural issues that we need to address.
Yeah, I was just looking at, so we are living in Ohio and we tape in Ohio. And so I was just looking at some of the Ohio statistics to sort of think about how what this looks like in the middle of America. And in Ohio, older Americans and older Ohioans rely heavily on Social Security for their basic needs. Nationally, 65% of those 65 and older rely on Social Security.
Mm-hmm, right. This is the other group that we're not talking about, people who have aged out of the workforce, right? And as you get older, you are more likely to rely more heavily on those governmental benefits. So when you're over 75, it's 73% of recipients of government benefits are relying on them for more than half of their income, right? So not relying on a retirement fund or something like that.
So one of the things that we've learned is that in Ohio, 17% of state residents receive Social Security. And of those 65 and older, 93% receive Social Security.
That's huge. We're talking about a lot of people, right, who are relying on these benefits, and a lot of different kinds of people, which, again, I think we need to kind of get out of this stereotype around who receives cash benefits.
This might be like a good time to just sort of quickly think about, how does one even apply for these benefits? What do you have to why is it so hard to get these benefits? Mm-hmm. And what kinds of conditions do you have to have in order to receive these benefits?
Right. And who has to verify those conditions?
Yeah. And how is it verified over time? We know that the pay for of benefits is pretty modest. And we know that you have to have pretty solid medical verification that you have a condition. That means that you cannot work. Mm-hmm. Right. And not only can you not work at your current job, but you can't find work that would be acceptable for your current condition. Does that make sense? I'm not sure I phrase that.
It does.
Well.
And this is a piece that I think is really important, because there's been a lot of discussion in recent years about people who have conditions that have been difficult to diagnose, right? People with chronic pain, people with post-viral syndromes, right? Things that are more difficult to seek out a diagnosis for. Those people are often not eligible for benefits, right, regardless of whether or not they can work, because they don't have that kind of medical verification piece.
Yeah, and I'm thinking about things that multiple chemical sensitivity syndrome, right, which we're only seeing increases of, or I'm thinking about things that are contested, like Lyme disease, long-term mm-hmm. Lyme disease, right, which are incredibly disabling conditions, but we don't have good ways to diagnose those, right, and even doctors are sort of argue with one another about what constitutes those kinds of conditions, right?
And if you're not working and you're uninsured, how are you going to find those doctors to begin with?
Exactly.
Yeah. So, I mean, we could talk forever about this. And I think that there are kind of many other aspects of this that we'd like to dive into. And we'd love to hear from our audience about kind of what are some of the issues around the benefit system or the social service system that you'd like to hear more about, or you'd like to maybe tell a story about.
Before we end, I definitely want to thank Tom for sharing his very personal story about how he manages this. I don't think we talk enough. I think we stigmatize the conversation about money anyway, and we don't talk about it enough in our culture. And I think it's been really helpful to hear from Tom and what he has to say about his negotiations with this system.
Absolutely. And we also want to thank our associate producer, Connor Smenner, our intern, Ava Gottschalk, and our Telling It Our Way advisory board members, Jorita Fox, Quinn Thomas, and Gavin Daly.
Special thanks to WGTE and our producer, Chris Pfeiffer.
To access transcripts for this show and any other show notes, please visit WGTE.org/ourway.
I'm Allie Day.
And I'm Becca Monteleone. And you've been listening to Telling It Our Way.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.